What a fascinating discussion with Sidney Kirkpatrick, author of Edgar Cayce, An American Prophet. We'll get into some of the prophecies of Edgar Cayce in a moment. Predictions on Coast to Coast AM. How about taking the Purina One Real Difference Guarantee? Purina One is so confident that you'll be satisfied. After taking the 30-day challenge, they'll give you a refund on a 4-pound bag of dry dog food if you're not. Get more information and a Purina One Challenge kit by calling 1-888-576-PETS. That's 1-888-576-PETS. Total satisfaction or your money back when you call 1-888-576-PETS. Cindy, how well known was Edgar Cayce during this time period while he was doing these readings, these trance readings? I know you were saying people lined up. Was it just from his community, or was it all over the place?
Well, towards the end of his life, when he was born, you know, in 1877, died in 1945, throughout those early 40s, he became quite a celebrity. There were various points earlier in his career, you know, where he certainly popped into the national consciousness. There were, you know, two New York Times articles, front page articles. But his sort of popular interest ebbed and flowed. But towards the end of his life, it was just overwhelming interest in Edgar Cayce. He certainly had his ups and downs. There was a big hospital, a great hospital built in Virginia Beach, and that's actually now where the conference center, you know, stands. It's okay. Actually part of the conference center in Virginia Beach where the archive is. But, you know, a hospital was built to treat people who had had some of these readings, who had difficulty obtaining medical treatments anywhere else, because some of the medical treatments it was not standard medical practice coming through Edgar Cayce. Some very unusual treatments, one of the big problems I think Cayce had, many of the recipients of the reading had, were finding physicians willing and able to put those treatments into effect.
What was his accuracy rate like?
Oh, I would say well in the 95-98 percentile. You know, of course, it's a matter of perspective. Can you prove it right or can you prove it wrong? There was a real interesting book written by Edgar Cayce's sons. You know, I think it was published in 1971, and the book was a study done on what Edgar Cayce got wrong. Now, we have some 14,000 readings. Edgar Cayce's children, who were, you know, intimately familiar with his work, you know, sat in on many, many readings, studied the readings. I mean, they knew the material. In some respects, Hugh Lynn Cayce, Edgar's eldest son, knew whole aspects of the readings that even Edgar Cayce himself didn't know, because he hadn't studied them in quite that way. But they wrote this book. They did this study. What did Edgar Cayce get wrong? And, you know, this is around 1970. They found perhaps just slightly under 100 very questionable readings. So jump.
And when you say those, Sidney, very questionable.
Well,
what does that mean?
You couldn't say that they. Some of them you might argue are patently false. Giving a reading giving a health reading for somebody who's already passed on. You would say is inaccurate.
Okay.
Person's dead. How can they be getting a health reading? Other readings, oil and natural gas readings. Well, that's a great subject, because in this book that the children wrote, in this study that they did, they found a lot of areas where, you know, Cayce said oil and natural gas would be found, but it wwasn't found at that time.
And so.
You know, jump ahead, you know, Sidney Kirkpatrick comes in and starts looking at those readings. I went through the same readings that were in you know, the Casey and Hugh Lynn, Edgar Evans's book in 2004. And out of those 90 or so readings that I studied, over half have now proven to be true. You know, what I'm saying is that readings that in Edgar Casey's lifetime, if you even want to jump back further, which were, you know, declared patently absurd, you know, are now, so certainly in terms of some of the medical readings, now state-of-the-art medicine. I mean, look at psoriasis in the teens, in the early 1920s. Edgar Casey was saying that, you know, psoriasis, you know, the skin disorder, psoriasis was the result of the thinning of the walls of the colon, and that toxins were leaching out of the colon into the system and had to be expelled and were coming up through the skin, and that the way to treat psoriasis, you know, was not with a skin ointment, but by changing your diet.
And he was right.
Absolutely. You know, there's a physician now in New Jersey who has something like a 99% success rate treating psoriasis using the Edgar Casey diet.
Have the pharmaceutical companies, Sydney, looked at Edgar Casey's recommendations and formed prescriptions or drugs based on what he said to use?
Well, you know, you get into a whole corporate kind of problem here, because Edgar Casey, you know, these are not medications, these are not treatments that can be easily patented. So the big corporations don't want them. I mean, look at...
They're natural, right?
A reading, you know, when I first got into this, as you know, I was really skeptical.
Right.
I was skeptical about the whole medical reason. I was skeptical about the whole subject. And one of the first things that I started using was for hair loss. I was losing my hair. I knew it. I could see it. I could look at a picture of my father, his father.
Yeah.
But I was going to lose my hair. So I went for the hair loss, you know, readings. I started studying them. Pennsylvania crude oil. Massage it into your scalp.
Crude oil?
Crude oil. Horrible. It's horrible. They, you know, what one of the readings, one of the things they don't say in those readings is the scent that it's going to leave in your shower. But amazing. I mean, it really works. And every treatment that I've, Casey treatment that I've taken on and used, it really works.
Are you saying your hair grew back?
Oh, sure. I mean, if you go, you know, step into a library, look at the dust jackets on books that I've written over the years, and, you know, my hair's getting thicker every time out. It's wonderful.
That's amazing.
And, that's just one example. As we know, there's just a wide spectrum of medical health readings. So this is a great source of material, no matter what the condition is. It's certainly worth looking at.
I am going to go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, but the corporations aren't going to really latch on to them because they can't be patented. Iodine, for example, you know, we know, you know, iodine's in our salt, you know, but there has been a great deal of talk that the iodine in our salt is not exactly what we need, and that the formulations have changed over the years. And yet we know, you know, the body needs iodine, pure iodine. Casey, you know, talks about Atomidine, which is his form of iodine, in thousands, literally thousands of readings, and it's crucial to all kinds of health treatments, no matter what the condition is. Casey was recommending this over and over, you know, but this is not something a big corporation, you know, wants to get on, because anyone can get it. It's very simple health remedies. And I think, you know, as I look over what's truly remarkable about this Casey work is how each of these readings, each of these 14,000 or so readings, is geared specifically for each individual. Say, you know, George Norrie goes to get a reading. That reading is going to be geared speaking specifically to you at this moment in time. And this is important because, say, you've got a heart condition.
Yeah.
What comes through in that reading is a recommendation for a treatment that you are personally capable of doing. And this is why some trans recipients of Casey's work, you know, are sent to the Mayo Brothers Clinic, or they're sent to one of the big cities to get an operation. And somebody suffering from that same problem may not necessarily be sent to the Mayo Brothers because they can't afford it. So they're sent out in their backyard to scrape the bark from a peach tree.
God.
Or a woman suffering breast cancer is told, get your rabbit hutch. You've got to raise rabbits because you're going to need the pelts of these rabbits. And then there's a long, lengthy description about how to skin this rabbit, how and where to apply this rabbit skin against your body, you know, as a kind of poultice. So corporations would have a problem with a lot of these Casey readings because it's available to everyone. Certainly now you can go online and there's a number of distributors of Casey products. You know, so certainly, I always recommend people to start, in Virginia Beach with the Association of Research and Enlightenment. You go down there or get on their website. You know, they've got all of, listings of products and resources and that kind of thing.
And it's a great, it's edgarcasey.org, I believe, is their website.
Yeah.
And that'll take you straight to it. It's just wonderful.
They're not the only producers of Casey treatments, and the readings are available to everyone. You can study them online. I keep them right in my computer.
Let's talk about some of the things he talked about, Sydney, and have you chat with us about them. First and foremost, he talked about extraterrestrial life. Let's elaborate on that.
I'd love to elaborate on it, but there's so tantalizingly little.
Really?
Casey does say, he's asked, is there life? Does life exist on other planets? And he says yes. Unequivocally, yes.
But could be a plant.
But does it exist? But there's a qualification. He says, but you will not recognize it as life as you understand it.
Huh.
So does that mean it exists in some other dimension? Does it, it's a difficult question. Now there's another reading, and just one reading. It's actually two or three lines in one of the readings where Casey's essentially asked about flying saucers and describes, what we would say today is an unidentified flying object,
yeah,
in South America, and that aliens per se, Casey doesn't use that term, aliens, have visited. Casey really doesn't go into any kind of detail, and it's tantalizing because this is something we really want to know about.
Absolutely. Okay, how about Atlantis? What's he say about that?
Reams and reams of detail on Atlantis. I mean, if you're interested in Atlantis, certainly the Casey material is the place to go. And, it's an exciting, it's a tragic, exciting, it's a story. So Casey certainly details what life was like in Atlantis, who some of the individuals were, and what comes through is a description of a very, very sophisticated civilization. perhaps not the kind of civilization, you know, that appears in a science fiction film, but it has many elements of that. I mean, you know, a culture that had a means of flying around, of mass movement.
High technology.
Yeah, certainly high technology. One of the interesting questions put to him, and this is something I would personally absolutely love to take the time and research. It's somebody out there, I hope, will someday. You know, Casey was asked about evidence of Atlantis. Well, how are you going to prove it? You know, how can we today prove the evidence of Atlantis? And of course, the Edgar Casey Association, you know, has launched various trips to the Bahamas where Edgar Casey said evidence exists.
You know, in the Bimini area.
In the
right?
Bimini, right, the Bimini Road. That's something, of course, has been explored. But there is an interesting reference in one of the readings that says, well, isn't it interesting? Evidence for Atlantis has just been found. It's been found by a University of Chicago archaeologist in South America, and the reading specifies exactly, you know, where this archaeological dig is taking place, and the organization. It doesn't name the person, the actual archaeologist who's found this. It just says a dig by the University of Chicago, and the evidence is on its way to the United States right now. Only they don't recognize it for what it really is. They have found this object, and they think it's, and they recognize, you know, its antiquity, but they don't know that this was that this is an art object or a science object, however you want to describe it, from Atlantis. So the clues are all in this reading. If someone wants to take the trouble and, you know, figure out who was digging in South America at that time.
And track it down.
Yeah.
How about the Hall of Records?
Well, this is more evidence of Atlantis. You know, according to the Edgar Casey readings, and of course, you know, we talk about the wide spectrum, the wide range of Casey readings. I mean, Casey talks about, you know, the lost years of Jesus. It's sort of wide spectrum, wide swath of world history covered in these readings. And in the Atlantis readings, of course, Atlantis is destroyed in a cataclysm. It's actually not one cataclysm, but three separate. One that breaks the continent up, and another that, you know, destroys cities, and finally the third, which you know, Atlantis sinks into the ocean. But Atlanteans have left that continent and have traveled because of their sort of space age kind of devices, as you might describe them, hot air balloons. One of the locations that Atlanteans travel to is ancient Egypt, and are very significant, very helpful in teaching Egyptians their arts, their talents. And according to Edgar Casey, underneath, you know, buried in a chamber, in a hidden chamber, underneath the paws of the Sphinx, are Atlantean records, are a hall of records, and that someday these records will be found.
And they have found a hall there. There's something there.
Yeah,
they haven't apparently. They haven't dug it up yet, I don't think. But they found something. Let's talk a little bit more about that, Sydney, when we come back. Well, according to Edgar Casey, there were three Atlantean halls of record, located in Egypt near the Sphinx, underwater in the Bimini area, as he says now, under slime, and also in the Yucatan area near Guatemala, in that area. And apparently what is in these halls of records, stone tablets, linens, gold, and other artifacts, the records relate the entire history of humanity including the beginnings when the spirit took form or began the encasements in physical bodies in the ancient lands of Mu in Atlantis. And they also apparently contain information about the ancient practice of building pyramids. And that is interesting, too. We'll talk with Sidney Kirkpatrick about all of this when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Though the Hall of Records might contain plans on how they built the pyramids, Sidney, did Edgar Cayce ever say how he thought they built the pyramids?
No.
Darn.
I know. I wish only that he'd been asked that.
He was pretty successful and very accurate. And the more I hear about this from you, the more exciting this gets. And because we're going to get into some of the things he talked about in the future as well. And one can deduce, if he was accurate about so many other things, maybe he's accurate about this as well. As a matter of fact, before the Dead Sea Scrolls were ever found, did he not talk about the Essenes? And was he not accurate about that?
Absolutely. And, you know, this was one of those areas where when Cayce initially made those readings, that information was just dismissed as patently absurd. You know, what Edgar Cayce essentially said was that Jesus was raised in a community of radical Jews, a sect called the Essenes. And, you know, at the time, and that this Essene, this Jewish community who raised Cayce, who raised Jesus.
Maybe they raised Cayce, too. Who knows?
that the rabbis, you know, that they had chief rabbis were female. And, you know, Cayce in his readings actually gives the name of the rabbi.
And theologians at the time said, that's ridiculous. He was proven correct.
Absolutely. You know, eventually more and more information came forth, you know, historically about, you know, the Essene community. And you know, and then, of course, the Dead Sea Scrolls, which Cayce said would be found, were actually found. And he said that, you know, years prior to their discovery. And then certainly most recently, excavations in and around the Dead Sea, which have, put forth, I mean, we have actually found cemeteries belonging to the Essenes, and the most prestigious burials in those cemeteries, the rabbis, they're female.
Yeah.
So, you know, there again, Cayce's just hitting it right on the head, and you know, readings that we dismissed earlier on as, you know, were dismissed earlier on as being ludicrous, you know, are now coming true. It's sort of state of the art. I'm personally just get so excited about the science readings, you know, throughout the 1960s, 1970s, so much of the study, so much of the emphasis was, you know, directed on the spiritual side. Which of course is extremely important to the Cayce work, but it was often to the exclusion of the scientific readings, and I think this was because of the people coming in to study the readings. I think scientists, were the first to just dismiss, to just close their minds to any truth that could be found in the Cayce work. And I think, you know, spiritually minded people were initially drawn to the work. But I think that's changing now. And as more scientists, as more engineers start opening their minds creatively to the possibility of the truth of psychic phenomena, more coming in and starting looking at the readings. And some of these Cayce science readings are just unbelievable. I mean, they're just astonishing. Anti-gravity device.
What did he say about that?
He talks about, rotating magnetic discs. which we've heard from, which is a hot topic right now. perhaps the most elaborate of these inventions that sort of came through Casey and Trance is something called the stancil motor. And it looks something like one would describe as an evaporative cooler, you know, about something about that size. Only it's got to be assembled underwater.
Huh.
What it is a perpetual motion motor. And Casey in Trance gives, you know, detailed description of exactly how this is to be made, exactly the materials, the density. What's so fascinating about it is, that it's got to be assembled underwater.
And has anybody built it?
No.
Why not?
Attempts were made in the 30s when this reading was being, you know, when the stancil motor readings were being given, and when the Depression came along, that project just went belly up.
But it's out there.
It's actual description of how to build this motor, and the concept is that once you assemble it, and it's not that the individual parts of this motor are complicated. It's the trick is assembling it in the right order underwater.
And why underwater?
I don't know. But the
I guess it runs underwater.
No, it doesn't run underwater. You just have to build it.
That's
underwater.
Weird. Maybe the parts are too heavy.
In a pool, and then the idea is once you start it moving, once you start the parts moving inside it in this sort of dome. That's within the structure of this motor. Once it starts moving, it will not stop. Casey essentially says that, unless you stop it.
And can it be used for? Anything, I guess.
It can be used for anything. And it's described as a way to protect the Earth, as a way to generate great amounts of energy. Without pollution, Casey's giving a green energy reading.
That's how did he spell this thing?
Stancil, S-T-A-N-S-E-L-L. It's sort of referred to as the perpetual motion motor. If you look in the index to my biography, American Prophet, you'll see the whole chapter on it.
Well, I'll make sure somebody. Who's listening in tonight will build this thing. I you know what? It's probably been built by the big oil companies, and they're not telling us.
Well, and there's a lot of simpler devices too that come through in these Casey readings that haven't been built. There's a device, and you know, I'm certainly not an optician, and I really don't know about grinding glass, but the way I read this, it should be. It doesn't sound like it's all that difficult, but the Casey readings contain a description of a device which you can almost use like glasses, almost you would look through like a pair of binoculars, only you're able to see auras.
Amazing. Okay, does he – now, back to Atlantis for just a moment. High technology, it sinks, 3 calamities – did he explain what they were? Asteroid hit? Anything like that? Did they blow themselves up? Did he ever get into that?
Oh, absolutely. Essentially, the Atlanteans are responsible for their own demise. They form a power center, a great crystal, and it harnesses energy. And the Atlanteans have sort of got too smart for themselves, too arrogant. Started misusing this and created havoc in their own environment. I mean, the parallels between then and today, you know, are just remarkable. Oh, just
too close. And we're getting this thing going in CERN in Switzerland, this particle accelerator going. I'm wondering if that had anything to do with it. But so that this crystal helped sink the island or crack it up?
Well, resulted in cataclysms that ultimately sank and destroyed, you know, Atlantis.
It exploded.
Yeah.
Something happened like that, I would think.
You know, many of these readings that we know about Atlantis are given for individuals. And you got to keep in mind, you know, Casey just didn't do, you know, I guess he did do a few general readings, general sort of all-purpose readings on various subjects. But the Casey readings are given for one person at one moment in time. And these readings on Atlantis are given for individuals who had once had incarnations in Atlantis and are now being reborn, you know, in this century. I've interviewed one of these people who had an Edgar Casey reading and had been an Atlantean. And essentially what that reading has said is that you've been born with some great skills, some great gifts, a knack for engineering, and you'll do well. Stay away from bombs. Stay away from, you know, atomic energy. This will not be good for you.
He's warning us.
He's warning this individual.
Okay.
This individual, and he describes the individual as having been born, you know, having been an engineer in Atlantis in a previous incarnation. And he's reborn in the 1930s, and his inclination is towards engineering, and he receives an Edgar Casey reading. Actually, he received several describing the Atlantean incarnation as a warning. He said, you know, this is where you once were. Watch it next time. The single most fascinating individual in all the readings to me is a guy named Mitchell Hastings. Mitchell Hastings, a New Yorker, his family were very spiritually inclined, big mm-hmm. supporters of Edgar Casey. Whenever Edgar Casey would come up to New York City from Virginia Beach, they often stayed at the Hastings house. Fairly well off. Mitchell Hastings is the youngest. Mitchell Hastings Jr. He got his first readings when he was in diapers.
Huh.
This child was told, you know, through the readings that were given on the child was that this child is born with some very special gifts and would make a great engineer, would make a great designer, would do great things with crystals. So what is Mitchell Hastings ultimately had a spectacular career. Mitchell Hastings is responsible for FM radio.
Oh, my.
Mitchell Hastings, was one of the youngest engineering graduates, top of his class, Harvard University, ended up working for David Sarnoff at NBC,
yep.
Who, by the way, also had readings. You can be amazed at how many important people, important movers, shakers, you know, who had these readings. Of course, we didn't know, you know, because the identity of those individuals couldn't be revealed. We didn't know it, but that's just one of the great new things about exploring the Casey vaults. But anyway, Mitchell Hastings received dozens and dozens of readings and began conducting them himself. Several of those readings are for technical engineering types of devices. And it's now known. I mean, Mitchell Hastings became an engineer at IBM.
Now, with these readings that Casey has undertaken, did he ever talk about World War III? He predicted the first two world wars. Did he talk about a World War III?
Well, yes.
What did he say?
You know, again, let's step back here and look at, you know, readings are given for individuals, sometimes groups of people. And so one has to assemble information given to specific individuals and correlate them. You know, we've been talking about Mitchell Hastings, this engineer,
right,
who I'm fascinated by. Mitchell Hastings, you know, received one of these great, you know, futuristic readings. It's actually one of my very favorite readings. It's number 3976. Okay. If anyone wants to go into the Casey Library, you can go on, look at it. Look at it. It's 3976-15. I think it was given on January 19th, 1934, in New York, at the Hastings apartment in Manhattan. Now, this is one of those really comprehensive readings. In it, it discusses, let's look at the date. First of all, this is 1934. It's talking about World War II. It's talking about FDR. He may not live through his office. He talks about a young king. The king is questioned, or a question is put in the course of that reading. Well, who is that young king? Where is that young king? Adolf Hitler, mm-hmm. Germany. So World War II is discussed. And more of the future, Casey speculates on within this reading. And let me hear it. Let me just look it up, and I'll yeah, just show you, reread you one paragraph.
Let's get this one right, because
this is really scary.
We could be right in the middle of this one.
Okay. The earth will be broken up in the western portion of America. I don't know. Does that mean California is going to drop off into the ocean? It sounds like that to me. The earth will be broken up in the western portion of America. There will be the upheavals in the Arctic and in the Antarctic that will make for the eruption of volcanoes in the torrid areas. Well, we're certainly seeing this stuff right now, aren't we?
As a matter of fact, just
Arctic,
had a story.
Antarctic?
Yep.
Okay. Now, there will be the shifting of the poles. Now, you must have had people you've
yes.
talked to on the air about this subject.
Yep, and it's happening, we think.
Frightening. As to times, as to seasons, as to place, alone it is given to those who have named the name and who bear the mark of those of his calling and his election in their bodies. This is almost a reference directly out of Revelation.
Yes.
I mean, well, what this reading is, this is the Armageddon reading. And there are several.
The Mark of the Beast, sounds like.
Mark of the Beast, exactly. And in this reading in particular, and I keep it handy because I'm often looking at it, but I get scared sometimes looking at it, and sometimes... there's a name, John Peniel. There's a name in this reading. It says John. It essentially suggests that there's an individual who has already been or will soon be born in the United States.
And his name is John Peniel?
John Peniel.
Is he the Antichrist?
Well, who will usher in these time changes. And I get scared. I mean, who is this John Peniel? I mean, we the Edgar Casey readings are so accurate and so on the money because the medical readings and the historical readings.
I know it. You have to assume are too.
You know, it gets scary.
Let's talk a little bit more about this, Sydney, when we come back with our final hour with you. And we'll open up the phone lines. This is amazing.